Hello, everyone, and welcome to CAAA Radio. I'm Poor Richard, and I'm here with Revere and the Rev.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome.
We're going to have a great show today. We're developing a new program here, and we're kind of getting into segments and doing different things. We're going to start with something we call the Lost History Book, and we're going to go over who was Paul Revere.
Right on.
So we'll go a little bit into history there. And we have a guest on our show today. It's Jesse Kivon from Mankind. Say hello, Jesse.
Hey, what's going on?
He is going to answer a few questions for us, and we'll get to talking with him a little bit later. We're going to have On the Tube and go over some YouTube clips and just see what's out there for you guys to view. And we'll wrap it up with going into some news. And so let's get started.
Teacher, I lost my history book.
All right, so this is a new segment called The Lost History Book.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. And I have to assume that children nowadays do not have history books because they don't know anything about history.
Well, they can't help it if they're reading a history book that's full of lies.
Well, my sister is finishing up the middle of her sophomore year at Middle Tennessee State University, and last year she was reading a book called The Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Wow.
And I forget who it was by, but you can definitely Google it and look that up. But, you know, one of the things it talks about is the fact that Christopher Columbus did not find America. And I just think that's a pretty profound statement.
Do you know who did?
You know, I'm trying to think who it was.
So we know it's a lie, but we don't actually know the truth.
Well, I forget. I read the book like a few months ago, and
well, that's the point of the segment,
right?
Maybe that'll be in the next segment.
Okay, so for today, we're going to talk about Paul Revere.
Okay,
yeah.
And Revere, you've taken on the name Revere to honor the great Paul Revere. So tell us a little bit about him.
Well, he was an American silversmith and a patriot in the Revolutionary War. And before the war started, he was famous for saying, "The British are coming."
But did he actually say it, though?
No, that's not what he actually said. That was actually a myth.
So, but is it a myth or a lie? Or they're basically the same thing, right?
Well, yeah, it's probably more like a lie. I mean, he actually said the regulars are coming.
Right, because if we told people now that the regulars are coming, they're just not smart enough to understand that that means the British troops are coming. Because
exactly.
People back then were still British citizens, and they all considered themselves British citizens.
Yeah.
So you couldn't just yell, "The British are coming," because that could mean your neighbors are coming over, you know?
I mean, he was great in the fact that he was like a lookout, warning the people, "The troops are coming, arm yourselves, get your children inside, get ready for, you know, the hailstorm to come down," basically.
Do you think they called them the regulars because they were regulating things?
That's an excellent question.
That is a good question.
I don't know. It was just like one of those things that floats around in my head.
Well, they definitely stood guard over posts. So, I mean, they were regulating things.
But you had all of these orders coming down from the king, and that show of military force was there to intimidate the colonials to make sure they obeyed the orders of the king. They were enforcers, you could say.
Yeah.
Now, Paul Revere hand-carved a document about the bloody Boston Massacre. So a lot of people think that he was there and he witnessed it. And, you know, they say that because of the way that he sketched the bodies. They were lying on the ground and the soldiers shooting and things like that. So it's pretty interesting information.
But, I mean, what do you think is so important about that? Because with the pictures, it gave an image to that story and made it more dramatic.
Well, his picture was so detailed that people have kind of concluded that he had to have been there.
Oh, I see what you're saying, right.
And like, that is an example of his passionate patriotism and belief in liberty and freedom for the people living in the American colonies.
Right, and he also wanted to, that event was a catalyst for him to make it happen.
Oh, well, yeah, that was, By that point, he was already making it happen. I mean, he was part of the
Sons of Liberty.
Yeah, and he was very involved with that. He was very the messenger system that they had in place was not just for, like, he didn't just jump on a horse and go tell people that the British were coming. You know, he was responsible for delivering information from Massachusetts to New York all the time. So he was extremely familiar with the land. And so he was probably, if not the fastest, one of the people that could make that ride the fastest.
Right. Now, I bet that Paul Revere is revered by Ron Paul.
Wow. Think about this.
Paul Revere revered by Ron Paul. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Sons of Liberty. Ron Paul's thing is called Campaign for Liberty.
Yes.
He was a silversmith.
Yeah.
And Ron Paul calls for sound money using gold and silver.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's
a conspiracy.
Yeah. Has to be.
It could be.
Too many coincidences to not be planned.
Now,
what else you know about this guy?
Well, do you guys know about the midnight ride of Paul Revere?
Well, I know that it took longer than probably an hour, and he went to several cities. So do you know where all he went on that ride?
Well, it was just before the Battle of Lexington and the Battle of Concord. It was on April 18th of 75. And he and William Dawes were instructed by Dr. Joseph Warren to ride from Boston to Lexington, basically to warn John Hancock and Samuel Adams of the movements of the British Army. So it was within Massachusetts there, from Boston to Lexington.
So he, like, there were, Dawes and Revere were both sent because Dawes went the land way around Boston Harbor and Revere crossed the water to Charlestown.
Yeah.
And so they both went, and Revere obviously made it more quickly because he was on the water. So he kind of gets all the credit for it. You know.
Yeah, and basically the British regulars were stationed in Boston since the ports were closed in the wake of the Boston Tea Party. So that brings up another good point, is this is happening, you know, around another famous event, the Boston Tea Party, which if people don't know about that, they should definitely check it out. I mean, it's another pretty awesome event where
Sam Adams was involved with the Boston Tea
Party. Sam Adams,
A lot of patriots there.
A lot of beer there.
And, I don't mean to jump ahead, but I just, you know, I feel like these actions of our patriot fathers that we admire closely resemble, I think you could make a comparison to the riots that are happening in Greece right now.
Yeah.
I think you could make a comparison to, people standing up for freedom today, even.
Well, it's like, the Rev over here made a great point. Ron Paul, you know, since 2002, there's documentation of him being in Congress saying, you know, our economy is falling apart. The bankers are stealing everything, and no one is saying anything about it. Where are our Sons of Liberty? Where are our campaigns for liberty that are trying to make real change in this country and not the false hope of say, Obama and the Democrats or even the Republicans?
Yeah. And I did a little reading about Paul Revere as well, and I found really, really interesting that his early education was at the North Riding School, and then he apprenticed as a silversmith under his father. And his father died when Paul was 19, and he was almost done with his apprenticeship. So this guy was a silversmith, he was an artist, he was a dentist, he was all of these things, and he was educated as a boy and then apprenticed as a silversmith. So, like, what I just, you know, his writing and as a political figure and his leadership, like, that doesn't just happen. You know, he continued to educate himself.
Right.
And through that, he learned, like, publishing and getting the word out. And you know, it's fostering this sense of freedom. You know, that as a courier, that's what he was doing, is communicating that we should be free. We are not subjects. We are not serfs. We are not slaves to the king of England. We are free people that deserve to live free. And all of that, he put so much work into doing so many things to advance the movement of freedom.
Yeah.
That's good. What, you know, as we close this segment, what did he do during the war?
He served in the army as a colonel, I think.
Yeah, as a colonel.
And he was actually court-martialed and cleared of all charges, which I thought was really interesting.
By the
British.
Army?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it was for his actions at a battle. And I couldn't really find a whole lot of details on it, because once he was cleared of the charges, I think that's really what was important. But,
right.
You know, he just...
So this guy was passionate and dramatic, and, you know, the one thing I really think about is the fact that it wasn't like these forefathers of our country were just out saying, well, I'm going to be known as a rebel. They were just fighting for what they felt was right at that moment so they could carry on doing their normal lives and
absolutely
doing all the things they did, but wanting that next generation to come to have the opportunity to be free and to not be subjected to tyranny. So, well, that's awesome, man. Thanks, Revere. Revere, thank you for bringing that to us.
You're listening to CAAA Radio.
So we're here with Jesse Kivon from the band Mankind and from the Anchor Fellowship out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah,
here in our local hometown. How you doing, Jesse?
Doing great.
Now, you been doing a lot of radio shows since you've been in the band Mankind?
Yeah, you know, it's just the press is on me right now, man. It's just, you know, I had to squeeze this in.
Right,
my 6
right.
O'clock.
Oh, right on.
Cool. You know, it's, no, this is my first, and
well,
I'm glad to be here, man. This is cool.
I had the benefit of seeing you guys play a show down in Alabama.
Yeah.
No, it was in Georgia.
Yeah, it was in northern,
yeah,
northeast
it was,
mountains of Georgia.
That's right, in the northeast mountains of Georgia. And it was pretty intense. It seemed like the kids were kind of thrashing about down there.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed when I was walking around the venue, checking out all the bands, you guys had a back patch.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, because that really caught my attention.
Pretty interesting.
Well, the back patch it has the all-seeing eye logo on it, and it just says down at the bottom, the God of the Deceived, which you guys know is the Illuminati. And it's basically just saying that our country was not founded on God like we are choose to believe, but it was founded on just lies. And we want to get that out there, because a lot of people don't really believe that. And since we are Christian dudes in a band, it's kind of even more uncommon to have those kind of beliefs and understanding, and so it kind of brings up a lot of really fun conversations.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to, if you want to,
your mother-in-law,
if you want to think about visualize the picture of the patch that we're talking about, it's basically a pyramid with an all-seeing eye above it, and the all-seeing eye represents Lucifer in the Freemasonic religion.
Okay, so this is the same symbol on the back of the dollar bill.
True.
Right.
So, is anyone like? Because initially, I was trying to figure out to what level you guys were communicating, because, you know, the Word of God says that that you can't serve two masters, and he's referring to the love of money. And so on a very generic basis, it could be said that we can't worship, like, money is the God of the deceived. But you're actually saying that you all meant it on a deeper level.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome.
But, I mean, it basically... I got into a conversation about it with a kid in Birmingham, Alabama, and it was kind of funny because he didn't think we were a Christian band at all, And whenever we got to talking about it, I told him about how our country wasn't founded on, you know, God like we, you know, like we're forced to believe, but it was founded on lies. And he kind of came at it as the approach that we weren't Christian dudes in Christian band or anything. And I was kind of had to bring it back and say, no, this is, you know, we do believe that. We just are awake to what's really going on. And I mean, he was kind of shocked that we understood all that, but I think he was kind of thinking that we weren't, that we were just atheists and we didn't believe that, you know, God was our creator.
Wow. So
which
like,
happens a lot.
When you guys go on tour and stuff, what type of venues are you playing?
It all depends. I mean, you were with us in Georgia. We played.
Yeah, that was kind of like a dingy sort of underground club, but it was. Yeah. It seemed like it was run by some Christian folks.
It was.
Or
it was
or
run
something.
By a Christian guy. His name's BJ Dills, and he's been running that venue for a few years. And I guess the majority of kids that go out to that venue are believers. So we get those kind of shows that we play, and then we play the, you know, dirty, gringy, hole-in-the-wall kind of venues where a lot of, like, the crustier kids come out and all the kids that just hate God and hate, you know, everything that we stand for, but they kind of can connect and understand where we're coming from because we're just so open-minded to a lot of different things, and they see that and respect that, which is cool. So, I mean, we get both ends of it. You know, we play Christian festivals and Christian venues, and then we'll play, you know, just secular venues and stuff. So I kind of like, you know, the hole in the wall places more, but it's
cool.
It's just whatever.
Sweet. So this kid that you got into the conversation that thought you were an atheist, was which type of venue was that at?
Hole in the wall kind of
hole
place.
In the wall.
Yeah.
Was he an atheist?
Yeah. But he bought a patch.
Okay.
Right. But I tried to talk to him about, you know, what we believed, and he wasn't really having it. But.
So do you find that your message of, like you're saying, waking people up and this message of the bondage that we live in that we don't know about, you know, do you feel like that connects more with Christians or atheists?
I think, you know, both, but probably more so Christians because they understand a little more where we're coming from. Like the more open-minded Christians.
Yeah.
Do atheists, they just think we're stupid because we're singing about God a lot of times.
Yeah, totally.
And portraying this image of being so rebellious, but when really we're rebelling against just things of this world and of this nature. So it's kind of harder for them to understand, but that's, you know, what I want to see happen more with the band is being able to get those kids on a level of our understanding of saying, like, we don't blame you for hating God at all because if we were what you thought we were, I would hate God too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we kind of approach it at that level, but it's just harder sometimes because they're a little more, I guess, reserved to talk about things of that nature.
Yeah, totally.
When the Christian kids are just, you know, if they're open-minded and they understand, then they're pumped on it. They're either convicted, freaked out, or they ignore it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, I mean, we get positive response from a lot of Christian dudes, but the negative responses that we get are just that our shirts have St. Peter being crucified upside down on it, and they don't understand that. They think we're trying to be blasphemous or controversial, and I never want to get pigeonholed as that band that goes to Cornerstone and is the controversial Christian band or is trying to be controversial because we have St. Peter being crucified upside down. It's just...
I mean, you know, these are important historical facts
yeah.
that have happened in our faith, you know, as Christians. We've kind of forgotten, you know, where we've come from. We've come from a line of fathers that have sacrificed their lives literally mm-hmm. upon the cross, you know, like Christ did, and were hunted down for having the freedom to love God and to reach out to people to revolutionize the world, you know. And I think that's what I see in y'all's music, and that's what we try to do with CAAA is we're trying to renew the church to revolutionize the world. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge part of our hearts, as I think it's a huge part of y'all's heart. And the symbolism from, you know, the pyramid and the all-seeing eye and fighting against, you know, Lucifer to awakening the church, I mean, I think it's all connected.
Yeah.
Speaking of awakening the church, question for you is, in this subculture, how many kids are awake to like the globalist New World system?
In the church, or you just mean as a whole?
I mean, just when you're out meeting kids and talking to them, I mean, how many of them are dialed into what's going on?
Honestly, I'd say like 25% of the people
really?
That we've met. It's a good portion, but like I said, most of them aren't believers. And those that are, I maybe know three other people that aren't involved in the church, that our church, the Anchor Fellowship, that aren't what's the word I'm looking for? Aren't
awake.
Awake, right, yeah. So 25%, but that majority of that percentage being kids
okay.
that don't know the Lord. Which is cool.
What I've always loved about good heavy music is that the artist just finds a way to wrap the passion, and typically it's anger, you know? And what I love about you guys is that, yeah, there's anger there, but that anger is based on seeing the injustice that's out there, you know, and being angry about it and wanting to help people and wanting to inspire other people to help, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have any stories or if you've met people along the way that you would say like, oh, here's a good example of someone that like caught on and really got it and like went on to do some more stuff maybe.
Yeah. Well, I'd say this past year at Cornerstone Festival 2008, we played on the Anchor stage, and previously before Cornerstone, we wrote a song. We titled it GMA, inspired by Pastor Joshua's rant about GMA, meaning guilt, manipulation, apathy,
okay.
which we see a lot in Nashville.
Yeah,
but
let's go into what GMA, like what that is a commentary on. It's the Gospel Music Association and
yeah.
every year in Nashville they have a week of showcasing bands and giving out Dove Awards because nobody's good enough to win a Grammy and
yeah.
all this stuff. So, okay, so go on.
That's, I guess, where the anger comes in is it's just this righteous anger of being like, I mean, oh, I just see all the corruption in it, and even like kind of being involved in the music industry, I kind of have to deal with it on a daily basis. But
sure.
At Cornerstone, I was just really feeling it, man, because I also managed the stage there, and there was a few bands that were just being really, really, I don't know what words can I say on this show, like, I don't
pretty
like,
much whatever.
Douchebags, man. They were being douchebags,
yeah.
you know?
They were being hypocritical, huh?
Yeah, and they were treating our staff like dirt and just really disrespectful. And rock stars, and their status was nowhere near even... You're going to act like a rock star. You actually should be a rock star, and these guys definitely
were. Yeah.
And so I just got really upset because I was dealing with managers and bands, and I kind of went off on this rant about being entitled to things, and especially when you're in a band, you feel like everybody owes you something. And at Cornerstone, it's like, you know, the more kids that wear your T-shirt, you're entitled to something, and they'll bow down to you,
yeah.
know? And I just went off on this rant, and, you know, I said, it just really pisses me off, guys, and you guys need to stop trying to impress everybody and start keeping each other accountable. But I said it with a little more anger. And I know it was okay because it was out of righteous anger, and I didn't feel convicted about it. But that, to answer your question, that's what got me into this this whole, like, oh, mankind, they're angry, but they're Christians. It's a righteous anger. It's okay.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know? And yeah. so everybody at Cornerstone was just like, I have not seen that much integrity or honesty in a band play at Cornerstone and since the 90s. Like, we got compared to a band called Inner Means, which was an old Christian hardcore band that, you know, we just all liked and
sweet
and stuff. So we were just getting compared to all these old Christian hardcore bands that, you know, just weren't holding anything back and weren't afraid to say anything. And it's not like I'm trying to make people upset, but I think it's like a level of accountability, you know? It's like,
sure,
you guys need to, you know, help each other out and keep each other accountable and stop pretending to be somebody that, you know, you think you are and that kids think you are.
Absolutely.
Because,
right?
I mean,
man.
That's like... That's, I'm going to go off on a rant, man. That's
yeah,
what's killing a lot of these kids' mentality and their dreams is they're just, it's this whole Russian doll situation that you got. You know, you have a big band come along, like said Christian band, big band.
Yeah.
And then every band after that gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and they lose their integrity, their morale, everything.
Yeah.
And it's just smaller and smaller and smaller.
Mm. Yeah.
And so it's just like, where do we begin? What do we start with? You know, it's like, yeah, if you have these bigger bands, the big doll, and then everybody's mimicking them, but their actions aren't living up to what they should be. Mm-hmm. It's like kids are going to get, like, they're being influenced by all the wrong things. They're being influenced by the wrong right. bands,
yeah.
by the wrong messages.
Well, you have to question the motive. Like, what's the motive of these bands
yeah.
at that point? Is it really to build fame and fortune, or do they have a message?
Yeah.
And I know you've been talking a lot about anger, but, you know, honestly, in the show that I observed, it seemed like there was a little bit of a love fest going on between the audience and you, the singer, for sure, but... I mean, it's like there's a strong because you're married now. There's a strong message, but at the same time, I could feel that you were radiating a lot of love from stage, mm-hmm. which is kind of unusual in hardcore. It's not unusual for people to be angry, to feel wronged in some way, and the mm-hmm. crowd many times will join that. But there was a sense of love that and unity. So tell us a little bit about, is that an intentional thing or that's happening there or what?
No, I mean, it's kind of just, I don't want to, you can't be pissed off all the time. You know, I've learned that. And I try not to write about things that just kind of upset me within Christianity, but more so just, you know, what I love and what I love about God and what I'm continuing to find out about God and his character and how much he loves, you know, us and those kids that are at those shows. And we played a show, a festival, it was Hardcore Punk Fest in Jackson, Mississippi. And us and one other band were Christian dudes. And, you know, we prayed before our set and over the building because there was a lot of negativity going on. And we played, man. It was the most love fest I've ever been a part of. It was insane. Kids were,
it's awesome.
Kids were falling on the ground crying. And God just was speaking through me. I wasn't even singing the words half the time. He was just like, I want you to lay your hands on this guy as you're playing the song and just pray over him.
Wow.
And I don't even know what was going on. I was just praying for him. And so it's like at those times, it's the righteous anger is kind of drowned out by the love of God, you know, and the passion that I have for, you know, seeing just these kids understanding the grace of God. And I want to be able to, our band to be a part of that, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like, You can be mad all you want, and kids are going to get it, and they're going to be like, that's cool, man, these guys are mad, but it's whenever you're real with them and say, you know, look, man, this is what we have, this is what we're believing, this love is, you know, it's changing my life, it's changing yeah. all our lives, and to see these kids crying, and there was some guys there that weren't Christians at all, and they came up to some of our guys in our band, and they were like, can you guys pray for me, and we got the opportunity to pray for some people that didn't know, you know, the God that we serve. And it was really intense.
Wow, man,
And one of the bands that played there, I was in a band called Gravemaker, which were playing at the Anchor a week later. And I didn't know that they were on the bill in Mississippi. So I got to spend the night with them. And later that next week when they played at the Anchor, it turns out that the singer that I met in Mississippi, he was actually like, questioning God and wanting to know more about him. And so,
wow.
Which when That's he came awesome, to Nashville man. At the Anchor, I got to pray over him and it was great.
Right.
So it's just like this whole, just,
it's a network.
Yeah. Community. Network. Family. It's a web of all these things. And that's what we're seeing.
And passion doesn't always, I got distracted in the middle of my question, but that part of what I was trying to say is that passion doesn't always manifest as anger, you know? And
right.
what I love about what you guys are doing is that you are moving people towards loving each other and loving the world around them, man. And that is just doing it passionately, mm-hmm. you know? Like, that is so beautiful, man. Yeah. So I think...
Well, we've only got a minute or two left here in the interview, how quickly it goes
yep.
the time. But, I know that you also promote concerts and you run the Anchor Music Venue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you find that the interactions you're having with people are about the same as the band, or how is it a little different?
It's a little different, but I think it's different because it's in Nashville, and Nashville in general is a lot different than a lot of other cities. And a lot of these kids in Nashville are a lot more apathetic and just kind of lazy with a lot of things. And it's kind of like they're spoon-fed Christianity their whole life. And so the last thing they want to do on a Saturday night is go to a church. But which is great because, you know, we'll have a music venue where bands that don't believe in God and bands that do, and they'll come out and you get the best of both worlds, kids that are Christians, kids that aren't. And the brokenness that comes in through this building that these kids carry, this baggage, it's just, man, it's powerful to pray for these kids and to be like seeing healing taking place, seeing kids that I talked to a year ago that hated God now walk into their calling. You know what I mean? And these are all majority 15 to 20 year old relationships that we've made.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, one last question for you.
Yeah.
A lot of things we talk about on the show is the darkness and the negativity of the geopolitical system, issues of justice. I understand your wife works for World Relief,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
which is meeting the needs of refugees. Some of them are political asylum,
mm-hmm.
From other countries. In general, I mean, I would say that probably in my years and experience in doing ministry is it's a very ground level. I mean, you're on a ground level with people experiencing their pain and their hurt. So what's the message that between the band or working at the venue, or I'm sure you and your wife have talked a lot about suffering in this world, mm-hmm. considering the work that she's in. What's the message? If you could sum up what you're about, what message you're trying to get out through the band or through your job with mankind or at the music venue, what is that message?
Well, I guess that God's grace is something that, you know, is always there. And no matter how much we suck or what we can't do, God's always there to pick us up. And I know that's a cheesy answer, but it's like, you know, my wife and I both, like, we both work in nonprofit and for churches. And it's like, if we don't have that mentality that every day we're helping people and saving lives, it's like, you know, if we get too caught up in doing work and not, you know, the heart of the matter is loving God and being able to allow people to understand that and see that, then it's just like, we're not doing this for the right reasons, or we're not doing this out of the right motives at all, you know? And so, I mean, I guess it's like, we all got problems. We all are going to be faced down on our knees in front of the Lord. And it's like, so why not live for him now so that we don't have to face eternal judgment?
Well,
you know
what
I mean?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, dude, when we're going to play some Mankind music going out so our listeners can hear what the music sounds like. Why don't you throw out your websites and contact information for people if they're interested in the band?
Well, you know, with the rise of MySpace, there's hardly any more domain names. So we have myspace.com/mankindhc. And you can hit that up for our music, or if you're interested in knowing more about the Anchor venue or what we do there, you can go to myspace.com/anchorvenue or anchorshows.com, and booking information and everything is on there.
Well, that's incredible, yeah. Jesse. You guys got a tour planned this summer?
I think so. You know, we're playing Cornerstone, the Anchor Stage 09. It's going to be a good time.
Anchor Stage 09, and there's a rumor that you guys are considering going on a suicide tour that is going to benefit Native Americans in the reservations up
yeah.
in the Midwest. That there's a suicide tour that you guys are considering going on.
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, man.
Cool.
That's pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool because I am Native American.
I know.
Quarter.
I know, man.
You got to take care of the brothers and sisters, man.
Conemaugh Township.
That's right.
Right on, man. Well, look, dude, keep up the good work.
Well,
and we will talk to you as soon as later. Here's a little bit of Mankind for you on the way
Thanks.
Out.
All right.
Over and done. God is on your tube.
Some people that got stranded on an island, and I think it was six or seven were Asians, and there was one American. And as soon as they were on, got stranded on the island, they had to divvy up the jobs. And one Asian was given the job of fishing. The other one was hunting. One of them got a job of gathering firewood, you know. So they all had jobs, and the American was assigned the job of eating. And so at the end of the day, they would all gather around and prepare this feast, and the American would sit there and eat it. And he wouldn't eat it all. He'd leave just enough crumbs so he can give it to the six Asians so they can go on and repeat it again tomorrow, spend all day preparing a meal for the American to eat. And now the way modern economists would look at it, they would say, well, this American is vital to the whole island economy. Without him, nobody would have to fish, nobody would have to hunt, nobody would have to gather firewood. I mean, he's creating all this employment on the island. But the reality is, every Asian on an island, his lot in life would be dramatically improved if they kicked the American off the island. Because now they'd have a lot more to eat. Or maybe they wouldn't have to spend all day hunting and fishing, and they can, you know, they can lie on the beach a little bit.
So Peter Schiff is was Ron Paul's economic advisor, and he's a respected economist across the board. And in this clip, he is talking about the policy of America as it exists right now is bringing on everything that we are getting right now. We are creating terrorists. We are creating danger. We are creating battles all over the world, and it's because of the way that we've been brought up to think that, oh, well, we're entitled. You know, we as the wealthiest and the country with the most power, then we are entitled to all these benefits that no one else gets. And you can only keep people down, and you can only keep people in serfdom for so long before they rise up and fight back.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, you know, the American people do a lot of great things for the world, you know, with humanitarian aid and different things, but we really have to get back to the basics here in this country of building up our infrastructure. I mean, the fact that we're bailing out the three biggest American car producers is just ridiculous. You know, we need to make better vehicles. We need to, you know, have better policies. We need to have better foreign policy. You know, we need to have a non-interventionist foreign policy.
Well, the New World Order is working to control everyone. And you can look at the world as a whole and say, like, okay, the United States is the beacon of control over the whole world. And then you look within the United States and you see a mini model of that where you have the people on the bottom of the pyramid and the people at the very top of the pyramid. Yeah. And then even within the power structure of the elite, you see it again where there are people on the bottom and people on the top. And it's this mentality that some people belong on the bottom and some people belong on the top that drives these people, that drives them to put in these programs that are designed to keep people poor. They're designed to make poor people more poor and create more poverty and create more more need everywhere while they are just gathering more money that they print and buy whatever they want to. And it's people have to – the system is out there everywhere for people to see. And you just have to open your eyes and just look at what's going on because it's not fair to you. It's not fair to our families. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to any of us. And in fact, it's victimizing all of us, and it's total control, and it's all based on this economic philosophy that credit and driving this stock market and this economy and everything with credit and leverage and all this derivative paper that's worthless. As long as the economy's growing, then everyone's okay. And that's just not true, and because we're seeing it all implode right now.
Right, and a part of the problem is the Federal Reserve in this country is eliminating the competition, is saying that new banks are banned. The Atlanta Business Chronicle just came out with an article saying that the Federal Deposit Insurance Company may be implementing what is effectively a ban for new banks in the metro Atlanta area, which that's... That's a huge area.
Yeah. And I also noticed that the Fed dropped the interest rate trying to stimulate loans.
Yeah.
But who's going to loan money right now?
Nobody.
Well, no, yeah. But that's the point of the Fed dropping rates is not to release these bankers to lend money, because the bankers are with the Fed and the Fed doesn't want them to lend money, because as long as the credit market that they control is locked up, then there's no way for the economy to run as it's been designed to do. We need the Fed. We need them. We have to have them, or these businesses can't carry on like they normally would.
Right. Well, this is a good video, and we only touched the first couple of minutes of it. You can find it on YouTube. It's called U.S. Economy.
The Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, The Philosopher's Stone. And it's getting some pretty good exposure, about 80,000 hits on it right now.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. The Campaign for Liberty, you know, it's really great people there, and you guys should definitely consider looking into them and looking into joining with what they're doing.
Also, later on in that clip, there's a very moving Ron Paul speech, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, it's brilliant. It's great work.
It's about 10 minutes long, so yeah. You guys check that out, okay?
And you know, the Ron Paul speech is back from 2002 when he's talking about the economic struggles that we're facing today, mm-hmm. you know, 6 years ago.
Yeah, I noticed even on Fox News, Ron Paul was right.
I know,
well,
man.
I tried to tell you, man. All right.
They all called him crazy.
Well, that's
year
awesome, man. Let's
president.
Get into the news.
All right.
And here's a look at the headlines, headlines. And here's a look at the headlines.
All right. So now we're just going to talk about some news and get into what's been happening over the last week. And President-elect Obama was actually officially elected by the electors, and he's continued with his transition team, and he's appointed quite a few environmental agents.
Like Al Gore.
Well, I mean, he's into the environment, but I don't think he got appointed anything, did he?
Oh, I believe he did.
Really?
Yes, he's called the Environmental Czar.
Wow.
That's the actual title.
Yeah, it's actual czar is
that's,
the actual
that's
title.
That's kind of Stalin-esque.
Wow.
I don't know, man. It's just czar is his title. He's a czar.
I read about Stephen Chu, Carol Browner, Lisa Jackson, head of the EPA. I try to get some background on these people, and Stephen Chu won a Nobel Prize for his work researching. Carol Browner is from California, and Lisa Jackson is from New Jersey's environmental equivalent of the EPA. And, you know, they're all pretty radical environmental thinkers, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of talk about the California policy and, like, you know, let's be as extreme or whatever as California is on regulating the environment and all this kind of stuff. And really what they're masking is a program of control and just a program of getting into every single inch of our lives. And it's just masked in this idea that that everyone is just – you breathing is killing the environment because you breathe carbon dioxide. Did you know that, Rev?
Or you exhale carbon dioxide.
You're a killer of this earth for breathing.
Right. Well, actually, I was listening to another radio show that comes on really late in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. which are the kind I like to listen to. And they had a speaker on there that was making the point that in actuality, because of the pollution, the earth is greener. And the plants are growing,
wow,
more productive than they ever have.
That's not really very surprising because scientists are now calling reports on global warming, you know, hysteria.
It's a religion, man, the environmental religion.
Well, and that's you have to look at. I mean, these people want to protect themselves, their families, their grandchildren, you know.
Sure.
So, but it's this, the New World Order is preying on our desire to be good people, and they're putting it just through all this misinformation and disinformation that they're putting it in our heads that, oh, you know, carbon dioxide is bad, and now they've even the rhetoric has changed because they can't call it global warming anymore. They got to call it climate change because now, you know, average temperatures are cooler, now it's climate change, you know, and the carbon dioxide just makes the weather wacky, you know. Well, weather's always been crazy, and it's always been extreme everywhere that I've lived, you know. You walk outside 1 minute, and it's snowing, and you walk outside the next minute, and it's sunny and warm. These things happen. It's part of the natural
cycle.
But
here's the thing with the globalist. If anyone who controls carbon output controls everything.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to pay for every breath we take.
Yeah, and they're trying
to
push through this carbon tax that Obama wants to push through is just totally ridiculous and unconstitutional.
Well, and they want to it's creating a new market where these carbon credits are available for sale, and so that way it's not a tax. We just buy the right to breathe. And so now they're creating one more way for people. Like, okay, so if you're selling me a carbon credit, well, you don't own the carbon that I'm going to exhale. Why do I have to buy the right to exhale from you?
Exactly.
So, I wanted to bring up this AP article from 2004 that's an example of the California policy. Environmental policy. Mm-hmm. Dinah Dagey, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Her family was spending between $250 and $300 a month on electricity, and the cops looked suspect to them. So they went to the judge, got a warrant, and this lady comes home from picking her kids up from school to find there's a drug sniffing dog and a search warrant. And these cops are inside her house searching because they think she's growing pot because she's paying $250 to $300 a month for her electric bill. And they think she's got an internal UV system that's, growing pot in her basement.
Wow.
So apparently a $300 electric bill is enough to get a warrant to go and search this lady's house.
Wow. Where did you say this was?
That's in Carlsbad, California.
Well, there you have it, California.
The article is from the Associated Press back in 2004. If you just look for...
That's even been a while back.
Yeah. That was, you know...
But this is actually the kind of thing, and not saying it's going to happen under Obama, but it is kind of scary.
Well, these are the people that he's appointing. The people that came out of this are the people that he's bringing into these positions of power.
Right. Well, I wanted to touch on what I said earlier. You know, the Washington Times is reporting that Barack Obama's desire is to create a new position called the climate czar.
Okay.
And that individual will be in charge of making sure that there is enough environmental policies happening and things like that. As of right now, though, Al Gore says he's not interested.
Oh, wow.
In the position.
Okay.
And so I'm not exactly sure why, but...
Well, this terminology... Go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
It just says he feels very strong right now. The best thing for him to do is to build support for bold changes that have to be made for the climate crisis. Climate crisis.
And that, well, yeah. I just find the terminology of czar very interesting. And so I looked up what czar is defined as, and it's a male monarch or emperor, especially one of the emperors who ruled Russia until the revolution of 1917. And then, of course, there's sub-definitions that a person having great power, an autocrat, an appointed official having special powers to regulate or supervise an activity. So, you know, this word czar is rooted in tyranny.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
literally.
That's crazy.
And I, you know, we have czars, we've had czars, but it's just this, the way everything is presented, everything, it goes back to this control and domination and just You are the people that don't know any better, and we do, so just love us, take our word for it, do what we say, and everything will be fine. We'll protect you, but really, we'll just kill you.
Now, I've been hearing a lot of papers rustling over there. When you say news, you're literally holding a newspaper in your hand.
Well, yeah, generally, that's a good source of news.
Well, that's debatable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but it's important.
Since every newspaper in the world is going out of business now, apparently.
Well,
nobody
yeah,
wants to
and
put
they're
up with their rhetoric
yeah.
anymore. All
well,
right,
I'm
so
glad,
tell us what you got there.
I'm glad
man.
That you read, though.
Yeah.
Poor
yeah, reading is good, man, and it's important that you're not just – you got to learn to read critically, too, and you got to educate yourself, and don't just get all your information from one source, Fox News. Get it from a lot of different places. Verify
CNN.
What they are saying. Yeah.
Or MSNBC.
So anyway, this is a bit more international, and recently in Thailand, there was an election of a new premier. And
really?
The headline from the Wall Street Journal is Thai Premier's election lifts hopes of calm for now. So there, this essentially the military took power from the former premier and who was democratically elected. Okay. And essentially what this article is saying is that the military and the elite have removed the old prime minister, and or I'm sorry, premier, and put this new guy in. And I'm just reading from the article here. The political conflicts that have ensnared Thailand date back to the premiership of Mr. Thaksin, a telecommunications tycoon turned politician. Thailand's longest-serving elected leader, Mr. Thaksin, introduced populist policies to the country's poor, mostly rural underclass, after coming in power in late 2001. Hmm. But his growing influence and autocratic leadership style brought him into conflict with the bureaucratic, business, and military elites that have long dominated Thai politics. In September 2006, the army removed Mr. Thaksin in a coup. He is currently in self-imposed exile to evade imprisonment on a corruption conviction he says was politically motivated.
Huh.
So,
interesting.
Here is yet another example of a leader who starts to fight against the elite, and then all of a sudden, he's ousted by the military.
Right.
Convicted of corruption, because we all know they're corrupt, but they're only convicted of corruption when it's convenient for the elites, when they start actually thinking, oh, maybe I should give something back to the people.
Hmm. Now, I don't know if people watched this the other day, but the neocon known as Gaffney said live on MSNBC that 4,000 U.S. troops had to die in Iraq to bring, quote-unquote, freedom to Iraq. And I'm, of course, paraphrasing a little bit, but...
Or 4,000 people, spiritual religious sacrifice to the demonic god of Lucifer. Now, I know I just lost some of you, and that sounds
well,
really scary.
It's true,
it,
though, man. I mean...
I mean, that's what it is. It's the worship of blood and power, man, and that's where these wars... And it's not just Iraq. I mean, it's been going on for centuries.
I know. They just found 2,000 bodies in a mass grave in Afghanistan from 2001, estimated, where they had 2,000 prisoners of war that were just slaughtered
wow.
for no reason at all whenever the U.S. Invaded Afghanistan.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I just want an honest answer to when has a war ever done any good for anybody?
Yeah, I mean...
In fact, if you want to answer that question, send us an email at caaaradio@gmail.com.
You can send all your comments, all your questions, suggestions for topics, anything you'd like. Email us.
You know, the reason that the American Revolution was fought is because we were defending our homes and our lands and our families.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that's the kind of policy that I want to believe in is defense, not this paramilitary training other nations to go into our nation or go into other nations to fight our wars
right.
or to fight a war against us.
Well,
you know,
we fight because we have to.
Exactly.
And that's the only reason That is the only reason. And, you know, this imperialist mentality of just creating subordinate U.S. states all over the world, it's unacceptable. We cannot stand for this anymore.
And it's not democracy.
No.
It's not. It's a dictatorship
being put into another country. Is driving through East Nashville and seeing all the boxes with the blue lights flashing on them.
Yeah, I mean, I live in East Nashville.
Yeah, East Nashville.
I'm sick of the spy cameras. I'm sick of the needless tickets for going 1 mile over the speed limit so that you can pay the government to continue to rape
us. We live in a
police state
in that part of the city.
No, this whole city is
a police state.
Our police chief, formerly of New Orleans, so we see what the fruit of his labor did in New Orleans down there. He left before Katrina. However, you know, it's his mentality that got them to the place where, you know, it's this military-style police. The presence is always there. Everybody, you know, it's like a traffic ticket all the time. All the time.
And let me say something, man. We love our police officers that obey the Constitution and that protect us every day. We love our military that fight for our freedom and protect us every day. But we are just sick of the lies and the deceit. And we are sick of America's good name being trampled on by the New World Order and the global elites for their private agenda.
Yeah, I have to say that the good thing is, at least for us, when we've been out demonstrating, so far the cops have been decent.
Yeah, they have.
They could be worse. So there are cities much worse. But I have to really wonder where this thing's going.
Yeah.
And the Nashville Scene had a cover story last week, Nashville's police state, and it was totally pro-police state.
Absolutely.
And the argument, and this is a relatively alternative and liberal magazine, a newspaper, said that basically said it's making Nashville a desired place to be.
Yeah.
Because that's what they think. They think that we desire that. And we've got some friends now moving out to the country because they can't put up with the police state anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish I could move to the country.
I think part of the problem is we have to get out of the mentality of, you know, undesirable people living in our city, whether it be a race issue or an ethnic issue or a religious issue. You know, this country was founded on people that were being persecuted in Britain and in Europe and came to this country to seek refuge, to seek, you know, a place where they could live their lives under God and to not be torn apart by the monarchs and by the tyrants.
Absolutely. Few more headlines. Just Illinois has joined the states looking for a federal bailout for their $2 billion budget
and
shortfall.
We heard that was coming next with state bailouts.
Yeah. Wow. U.S. factories, manufacturing is slashing output. The Fed said capacity utilization is down to 75.4%. Mm-hmm. So we could be making that much more stuff. We're just not.
Right.
The Asian Union is happening. Wall Street Journal, check it out. The Association
happening publicly.
Right,
that
it's
has been
yes.
on for a long time.
Right, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations is developing a treaty to join economically, which is the typical system of these economic treaties and agreements that then lead to an abolishment of sovereignty and a world government. Ecuador is defaulting on its debt. Their new leader is saying that this debt is unjustified, and it's all these World Bank policies that really look for third world countries to take advantage of, and the IMF and all that kind of stuff.
World Bank.
Finally, one of these leaders is standing up to them and saying, like, look, you have trapped us in this. And we are not giving you our debt. So that's a few headlines that you should check out.
It's ironic that just last week we were talking about China going bankrupt, and here they are announcing that union. And that's what happens in financial collapse.
Well,
they get the globalization going.
Well, today the Dutch Minister of Foreign Affairs said that we need an international order. And he's also a Bilderberg Group attendee.
Well, that's no surprise, is it? Want to thank you for listening to CAAA Radio, and a little shout out to one of our sponsors, Project AK47.com. That's Project AK47. helping get child soldiers out of Burma, and they are one of the international organizations that we have decided to support here at CAAA.com. And that is the letter C, the word triple, the letter A.com, or Christian Action Against Apathy.com. We want to thank you.
Drop us an email anytime, CAAA Radio@gmail.com.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Here we go.
Stand up, be a voice for the voiceless. Good night.